So it's more in your face, really, this quality of detachment. I can't get away from it, it's there in everything. And it can also be there in everything for a layperson if they can get this sense of non-ownership. They keep reminding themselves, well, these children, they're not mine, this house is not mine. Don't feel none of this belongs to me, I can't hang on to it, can't control it. So give you a taste of detachment. Or mixing with Sangha, or mixing with the samanas. Try to get the sense for the attitude of a samana, the kind of freedom that they have. It's much more obvious and all pervading in the way that they live, everything that they're about, on seeking, receiving, taking what comes, which is not passivity, but an openness over time, particularly if you, this is a Theravadan tradition, then there's great value placed on the elders of the tradition, because this is something that works on one over time. The people have been ordained a very long time, many years, and they just become moulded by this, this quality, this way, this middle way, not clinging, not moving away from. To establish this, then to find space. Another way of putting this is the detached mind is one which always has a bit of space in there. So there can be the need to find seclusion in order to find that kind of space, to live a relatively secluded life, to find a seclusion of mind, chitta vivek, find kaya vivek first, a kind of independent living, not depending on individuals, as on the group as a whole. Chitta vivek, similarly, find kind of emotional and dependence of mind, able to live on your own, not cut off, but able to live on your own, able to survive in seclusion, not needing others. So your need is perhaps the most subtle manifestation of clinging, or the kind of bottom line. We need the company of others, so to establishing independence through seclusion. So people who've lived long time in seclusion and have long retreats, take all these long retreats, can be very solid in themselves. It can be much more difficult than it looks just to be on your own and keep going, and not. You remain responsive and in touch with things, and not rely on others. So people can develop a lot of strength like this, and they can share with others. Not so needy emotionally strengthens you. You have time on your own, no one else to turn to talk to about your problems. You have to work it out for yourself. a great lot of self-reliance, and you can teach this self-reliance to others. We can't rely on others, can we? We can lose people. We can rely on the larger group, independent units within a larger group helping each other to be independent, but not withdrawn. Available. So this is the way in which the Samana life of the Dhammaravinaya can come together, is in promoting this attitude of quality of detachment in the way we operate. And there's similarly in lay community, and you can develop conventions which help this along in line with the monastic tradition. Not seeking for ourselves, sharing a very simple manifestation of detachment within a group is a group as a whole, which is it used to be the case, it still is in some areas of Thailand, that the village would share everything, so people wouldn't go hungry, that the people's basic needs were covered by the village in the village as a whole. Nobody was starving. Sharing things out is a generosity in sharing is the first clear manifestation of detachment, not attaching to your own particular existence, but willing to make sacrifices to help the whole group to pull through. It's very beautiful, isn't it? Lovely. As simple as that. So my mother, when she first came, she came to stay in a forest monastery in Thailand. She was really moved by people's willingness to share everything. Meticulously, actually. Things would be meticulously shared out. Everyone getting the same. Even when times are hard, it really takes something, doesn't it, not to try to get a bit more for yourself. It really takes something. That's a quality of detachment. Not just giving everything to everyone else and just starving ourselves. We wanted to, going the other way, one extreme, the other extreme, to take more than our share. Just taking your share. This maybe you can see this. This is detachment in operation. Seeing other people's lives is as valuable as our own. Not attaching to a particular life. Just loving life. Love of life. Of life that's even willing to sacrifice, willing to go without. If there's not plenty, not enough to offer, then going without. And some are willing to go without altogether if there's not enough, not leftovers. So, one of the original meanings of the word bhikkhu is one who lives on leftovers. The people in the village would cook some food, and then whatever's left over goes to the summoners and to the people who live off of them, for the monastery. So monasteries in Thailand, obviously, like there is in this country, very inspiring, free food available every day to people who come. It's the job of the person at the front of the line, gets the advanced job of looking at the number of people in the room, and then dividing the food in his mind, Okay, so there's this much food and there's this many people, so my share is about this much. That's the advanced practice in spiritual terms, not the cushy bit, isn't it? You're determined not to take more than your share. You have to try and work it out. Yes, he's often the guy at the end. You know, people are on the side of caution. They're at the front of the line. It's the last guy in the line. Might not get the best stuff, but you know, doesn't have to worry about the amount anymore. So often in spiritual communities, there are food left over. I've never seen that any of the monasteries I've lived at, there not be food left over. Or that the people at the end of the line don't get anything. I've never seen it. There's usually more than enough, usually more food, maybe more, it can be more basic at times, but more food at the back of the line. More basic perhaps because the people at the front of the line will think, well, the people coming just for the day, and then maybe they only, you know, going home for their evening meal, maybe they do only need a basic amount, a basic food, a bit of rice or something. Whereas if you just try to live off of just a bit of rice every day, you'll be in trouble. Somebody just turning up for a few hours, yeah, if there's just a bit of rice left over, then that's good, that'll keep going till they get home for their tea. So this is the spirit of it, and in terms of Mount, to always have in mind what there is to share. Also you see that the way it works is that the elders go first, so you know, obviously the older you get, the more vulnerable you are to missing a meal. So it would be the reverse of, you know, you see how the pack of dogs go piling into food. It's always the big, strong, fit ones that get the most because they can fight the hardest to get it. You know, so you reverse that and the people who've been around longest get first go because they're older. And because they've put a lot of time and effort into building the support or building the monastery. They've given a lot. And they'll continue to give a lot. They're the people that are sustaining the place. Isn't it? The people who can't sustain themselves, the people in the higher training, the bhikkhus, who can't do anything to sustain themselves, would be allowed to go first. They can't store food, or go if there's no food left over, they can't nip into the larder for something. Which is the reason why the bhikkhus go first, and not because they're male. That would be awful, wouldn't it? That'd be just like the stray dogs, the blokes muscling in there on the best stuff. But it's unfortunate the fact, and this is the way it seems within the tradition, that the equivalent training for women died out. So bhikkhus are ones living on the edge. The women's community then have a training where they can store food. Which is unfortunate. It's unfortunate that training is more difficult to provide. Is the way that it works, that order died out. It's a hard one to get around that. And in the kind of Orthodox Theravada community, that you haven't got a bhikkhuni to ordain another bhikkhuni, and how do you do it? I've got how to do it. To ordain and train another bhikkhuni. Although there are ways of being found, and people have found a way. The people who are sincere will find a way to live this kind of way, live this training. And there's no the people are sincere, then they find the support. That's what we find, what we see. To practice like this, practice on the edge like this. So, luckily, it really just it comes down to and the differences aren't so much. I'm happy to say. So it's all ways in which we can train ourselves to see this quality of detachment in the way that we live by applying it, by putting up, we put our life, as the lives on the line for it, because we could be willing to do this, because it can win us the deathless, which is not, you know, not a, just another life, but it's not just, you know, we already have a refuge in a way, a mundane refuge that we can we'll be reborn. You know, we're not it's not that we're either going to, you know, not that we're annihilated. There's not a life or annihilation if you have faith in rebirth. See that's the way it works. So I'll offer that for your reflection this evening.